your constitution. Well, my friend, it's gonna have to bend. I'm here to tell you about the destruction of all the evil that will have to end.
It will not.
This is Sunday, 2 p.m., 2:02, and this is Radio Free Brooklyn and Sasha Sugar with the What is Love show. I know it's not 4 p.m. as usually, but this is season number 4 on Radio Free Brooklyn, and we'll be on air with you guys at 2 p.m. every second Sunday. That's right. Now you will hear me and my host Dusty, who is with me in the studio, more often now. It's going to be twice a month, not once a month. So if you have an interesting love topic, please email us at whatislove@radiofreebrooklyn.com and suggest your topic. Or if you'd like to become a guest on the show, feel free to do that as well. I tried to start this song, the show, with quite a rebellious song, quite a feminist song by Nina Simone. It's called Revolution. And as you could see on social media, today's show is quite special. It wasn't planned. Originally, we were planning to have a show about great expectations and love, but no one expected not Hillary Clinton to win a couple of weeks ago. And I just felt that I gotta do a show. I gotta address my frustration. I gotta address my disappointment. I gotta address my confusion and pain. So today's show is about love and politics, and it's called Sleeping with the Enemy When Politics Crawls Into a Bed. Hey, Dustin.
Hey.
We're also expecting another guest to be on the show, Mitra. She's on her way. She's had a rough morning. I heard that she broke up with someone, and... which couldn't have been more perfect for What is Love show, right? So Mitra will join us later. And if you guys want to share your experience with frustration in love and trying to answer what the hell love is, please dial in at 718-928-9732 and we'll hear you out. So 2 weeks ago, I woke up and I saw the results of the election, and I couldn't bring myself together to get out of the bed. And I called Dustin and I was like, "Dustin, yo, what's going on? What do we do now? What do we do now?" And I'm sure y'all felt that frustration, confusion, disappointment, and start questioning, like, what do we do next and where love stands at all of it? Like, can't, like, because to me, the election was just about hitting on our basic instincts of hatred and the fear. And Donald Trump was quite a smart man in doing that and projecting that image. But to me, it's heartbreaking to realize that hatred could be a stronger feeling than love. So I think today we just want to try to define what love is, like deep down, what love is, and how can we use love in this dividing society to make it a better place. As much as cliche it sounds, but we still, all of us, are trying to make this world a better place for us, for the people we love, for our children, for our parents, like for all of us. So What is love?
Yeah. I don't know. This whole love question in terms of the, in thinking of the election, gets really funky for me. And usually funk for me is good. It makes me think about James Brown. But, you know, we were talking this morning about the election and about love and hate. I think that we were both kind of frozen or stilted in this idea of understanding like what that thin line is and like how we distinguish ourselves to kind of lift ourselves up, or I don't know, just really trying to understand like what this love thing is or what this hate thing is or how we understand love, which I think in most times I think we imagine that love is about power and control, and I think that's why hatred and love have such a intimate relationship.
Wait, you said that love has to do with control and power?
Do I think love has to do? I don't think that a real love has to do with control and power. I think that the way that we have practiced and projected love is very, very focused within ideas of control and power. Yes, I do believe that. We can talk more
about
that.
Do you think it comes from men towards women, or you believe that women or anyone who is in love try to project that approach of having power with someone?
Say that again for me.
Is that to you just a patriarchal thing? You think that the man, straight man, project that? The love as a power, the love as control, or it's something that we all at some point can be projecting?
Are you asking me where I believe things started, or are you asking me like what I believe is practiced?
Practiced.
I think the answer would be kind of the same for either for both. I think that we're so I think that we're so into a system, a really fucked system of like control and power, that it's hard to distinguish the difference. I think that even when we think that we're progressing, we're trying to progress to have some sort of like real hierarchical power, some superior position. So, yeah.
So guys, you can obviously hear that Dust and I are still trying to figure out what is going on with love and what is going on now with our lives. We are quite heartbroken and frustrated. And it's also super freezing outside and my fingers are shaking, so I need to have a sip of whiskey. I'll be right back in a couple of minutes, and let's think about what's going on with Marvin Gaye for now.
Brother, brother, there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate. You know we've got to find a way to bring some love in here today. Picket lines and picket signs, don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see, sister, oh, what's going on?
What's going on?
What's going on?
What's going on?
Yeah, what's going on?
What's going on?
Oh, what's going on?
What's going on?
Oh,
right on. Right on.
Right on. Right on. Right on.
All right, we are back on air. This is What is Love on Radio Free Brooklyn, and today we are talking about love and politics. I recently read there is this female group on Facebook, and one woman shared her recent not so funny story when basically she said when she saw her husband's reaction to Donald Trump's victory. And she was supporting Hillary, of course, and he was supporting Trump. She thought to herself, you know what? I cannot be married to this animal anymore. And she left. On the other side, I recently was talking to my ex-colleague about the whole thing. And he mentioned, he's such a nice guy. We get along very well. And he mentioned that he is... He doesn't support abortion. He doesn't support the female right to be able to control their body and to have an abortion case they will have to. And I almost choked at the lunch at the time because I'm obviously a woman and I feel it's up to me to decide, right? Not even get into the whole dramatism of situations like being raped or staying single after having a birth. So to me, that conversation with my friend made me question, so what I do now, like, how can we be as close as we used to be after this conversation? Because to me, my rights, female rights as to control a body are quite crucial. And for him, he obviously had a different perspective on it. So I guess I'm trying to introduce this sub-theme of the theme of how we're dealing with our loved ones, our friends, just people around us, just people in general who have completely opposite political views, political values. Can we use our love for them to deal with it? Do we educate them? Do we just not talk about that?
No. I think this is a great opportunity to potentially use ourselves as a case study in like our friendship. Like even... backgrounds, right? Like I am this queer black male from Alabama. You are a Belarusian woman. Like,
queer too, in a way.
Queer, yes, absolutely. No, for sure. So even thinking about like arguments that we've had in the past, especially when you got here as a Belarusian woman and realized like, oh shit, I'm not Belarusian anymore. I am white. And like how that was just like this crazy shock for you and how you couldn't deal with it. And like for us to even communicate, we had to have some serious conversations, painful conversations, to see each other. And like we thought we had this thing in common. The thing we had in common, probably the easiest thing, was like we're both queer. Like we're both weird. We both are.
I thought it was our love for dancing, Dustin.
That's pretty queer. I'm just saying that like we came together on like in this community space, and then like you think you have this thing, and then like. All the curds start to rise. Okay.
Hold on a sec. I think we have a phone call.
Hello?
Hello? This is What is Love?
Hey, it's Maria.
Hello, Maria. How is your Sunday going?
It's pretty good. I have not gone outside. I heard it's really cold.
It's pretty freezing outside. That's why I'm sipping whiskey here in the studio because I'm still shaking a bit.
Great. Sorry for interrupting you guys. I was listening to you two talking about how you found a common understanding. I want you to finish what you were saying.
Well, yeah, we were. Thank you. We were basically just what I was trying to get at is that relationships and communities or whatever works through like conversation and like hard, tough shit. Like you can't just. Assume that there's this true binary, like you have to work, and it's hard and it's painful. I was just talking about the work that's involved with love, or I was trying to get to a point where I was gonna see if looking at our relationship as a case study could reveal how love was work, and it wasn't easy, and it wasn't just like accepting how, you know, accepting difference. It was about like, no, let's talk about these differences and like let's even be upset about
right
things.
Like I had like, to basically train Dustin that I'm not real white, I'm from Belarus, I don't even know
train
what
train is a weird word, but
educate we are all educators.
Why can't
here
you be both why is one mutually exclusive to the other?
Was that, which one?
No, I think so the before, thing that in America, white has a different, it's a construct, it's a social construct, it's a different definition that white is probably in Eastern Europe, where I'm from.
And I think that, like, right. a big part of our, like, in terms of, like, this specific situation is that it was just her letting me know, like, just showing me her frustration with, like, I did not understand myself as this before I got here. So, like, let me talk to you about
well,
this.
It's really hard to yeah. give, like, you know, just because, so, like, coming from Belarus, and being right. white, you don't have to choose either or. You can be both. These are two very, you know, these are multiple identities. You've emigrated here. You're a Belarusian woman. You are queer, and you, I think you live in Brooklyn, right? And you are white, and these are and you're a woman. So I just named six identities that you are allowed to be. And I think what you're describing is that you found a frustration coming from a homogeneous society. Where everyone is the mm-hmm. same race and everyone is the same religion and most people have the same family values. And then you come into this country where it's a melting pot of different races and different family values and even different ideology. Because, you know, remember, in Europe, when they debate politically, it's not so much about these social issues about abortion and gun control. Some of these things are, I don't want to say solved, they're just no longer on the table. People talk predominantly about jobs, economy, and security, and education, and healthcare. But it's not like, oh, you know, healthcare is a privilege, it's a right. So the conversations happening in Europe are very different than the conversations we're having here.
Right.
Here, it is this, you know, you're kind of stuck into this, like, I'm a white woman.
But the thing, Maria...
You have to just be a white woman.
Right, but in my case in particular, I think I came here being quite open to the mm-hmm. diversity of races and cultures and religions and whatnot. I did not come here prepared for being accused, it's a strong word, but of being assumed that I project certain things just because I'm white, because we don't have that... social construct
right.
of whiteness in Europe.
What you're describing is culture shock.
I don't know. I feel like you're, I don't know, Maria. I feel like you're trying to surmise a lot of what we're saying into like these categorizations that aren't necessarily true. Also, I don't know that you're hearing when we say, hearing how we understand whiteness or blackness or any like type of like construction that supposedly limits you, and like it's bigger than like I don't want any. It's a lot. I'm trying to like.
Someone recently
words.
Told me.
Yeah.
Someone recently. I cannot. I'm a white woman. I'm a Greek woman. I come from an immigrant family. I'm married to an immigrant. So I, you know, I also have multiple identities, and I cannot understand what it's like to be a black man or a black queer man or a black queer man from Alabama. I can't, because I'm not a black queer man from Alabama. However, I can listen to you and I can empathize with what you're telling me, and hopefully, based on the way you communicate with me, I can understand what you're saying to me. I can't
and
understand.
What my inclinations
I'm not,
are.
I can't see you from your eyes.
So,
walk in your
so Maria, yeah, I absolutely agree with you on that. But I think I read in your article recently that could you tell us a bit more of what you do in your business? So, Maria is you're running a matchmaking company, and I believe I read that you start receiving requests from potential clients to use political views as an important factor in selecting a potential life partner. Is that right?
Yeah, so I am a business owner in New York. I own a matchmaking service called the Gopi Match, and we cater to busy professionals. Our youngest client is 26, our oldest client is 62. and we've been around for almost a decade, and this is our third election season, our third presidential election season that we've mm-hmm. come through. And it's been interesting because, like, in 2008, and then in 2012, we didn't see the requests that we were getting from our clients. So, like, when I look at my clients, 50% of them are what I like to call Bloomberg Republicans. And the other 50% are Bloomberg Democrats, I always say. Like, you know, you have people that are, you know, a little fiscally conservative, but very socially liberal. And last year, like almost immediately right after Trump announced that he'd be running for president, we started getting two types of requests. One was, I'm a Trump supporter and I want, and they would immediately tell you, I want to be with someone who's okay with that. So they already knew that there was something up. And then we started getting from women, don't set me up with a Trump supporter. And then that, wow, that became fever pitch after this August. So for a year, we were already dealing with politics. And in April, we mentioned it to someone. And we actually inspired an article about love and dating for the New York Times in August about this situation where people are breaking up. People are unwilling to date. And then I think in August, seeing after Donald Trump's remarks about the Khan family and seeing his approval ratings just drop, that's when it became fever pitch in our office, where people were just outright telling us, like, don't set me, even our Republican clients were like, don't set me up with a Trump supporter.
Right. So going back to your original statement that mm-hmm. we should be willing to accept everyone's opinions on any, at least to hear them out. But then now your research shows that people are quite divided right now. Our society is quite divided based on their political views. So do you think that communication is still, like, how, where does communication come into play?
I think, like, we have to define certain things. Like, one of these things, because I was listening to your show before I called in, where we talk about, like, political values, and it's like, well, no, that's not the right word, right? It's political ideology versus values. And I think this election season focused on values over political ideology. Right. This is a very different campaign that was run versus Mitt Romney in 2012, which was ideology at the forefront.
Mm-hmm.
Small government, you know, the kind, you know, what Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan were proposing in general. And then here it was, you know, make America great again. And of course, there's no definition to these things. And it was not a campaign driven ideology. And the biggest evidence I
absolutely agree.
There was never any policy mentioned, right? Trump has never told us how he would do anything.
But now, isn't it harder now to talk, since this campaign was based on the views of values and views rather than ideologies, which I agree with?
That's why there's problems now with dating. So it's because of the value thing, right? It brought up to the forefront certain values. So, for instance, when someone tells you, you know, oh, you know, I've heard from people that have, you know, I have friends who voted for Trump, and I don't ask them, I don't have to ask them why. They tell me on their Facebook.
Oh, they don't really. That's Trump. The thing now that now, you know, people were secretive and now they're more open.
Do values not shape your ideologies? Just wondering. I just wonder if they like have a relationship with one
another. Most ideologies shaped by your parents.
Yeah, so, but what are they, or do your parents instill values in you that shape your ideologies?
Absolutely.
I'm just wondering about the relationship, because I feel like...
Absolutely.
Okay,
so
yeah, they're not that separate.
I think they're a little different, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
they inform each other,
probably.
There are
people that I know that will tell you I voted... When people say I voted down the party line, it doesn't mean that that goes with their values. It just means that I believe in this ideology, and I'm just going to go down it, whoever's running. Right, it's like when people say, you know, hashtag vote blue for no matter who, you know, that's what that means. Hmm. And you're right, at this election season, values and ideology have become like a French braid. You know, you can't tell which one starts where. And the truth is that, yeah, your family do instill values in you, but I think you're still able as an adult to adopt different values,
right,
that... that capitalize on your fears. And I think this is what the Trump campaign successfully did for a big part of the nation.
Oh, that's true. But that was my original question. I think whether hatred and fear of the other, fear of the someone who has a different view, is more natural and more powerful than an ability to love someone who is different. So I feel like all, you know, this debate between what's first, hatred or love, it's been quite ongoing, and in a way, it's almost like there's a cold war between these two. And I'd like to play the song called "War" by Janelle Monáe, which will speak exactly to that. Marie, thank you so much for calling in, and I look forward to talk to you more about how political divides are not our society.
Cool.
So you think I'm alone? But being alone's the only way to be. When you step outside, you spin like a fighting for your sanity. This is a cold war. You better know what you're fighting for. This is a cold war. Do you know what you're fighting for? If you wanna be free, below the ground's the only place to be. Cause in this life, you spend time running from depravity. This is a cold war. Do you know what you're fighting for? This is a cold war. You better know.
God, it's not Soviet Union anymore and Cold War is over, but it's not. While we were all freezing here from the Cold War, Mitra showed up. So we got another guest here with us in the studio on Radio Free Brooklyn, Mitra Banchahi. She just joined us from Greenpoint. That's not very close.
Hello.
Hi, Mitra. And
not too far.
Did you bike?
No, I drove.
Mitra got a car.
Oh, shit, girl. We'll go on a joyride.
Yeah, did you also get a house? Are you going to vote for Republicans now?
No, I'm going to actually drive my car to the protest, the inauguration.
Right.
All right, it's in January.
It's in January. Yeah, you can.
Thanks. All right, guys, if you want to have a ride from Bushwick or Greenpoint to DC,
but maybe we should get a bus. That's a good idea.
Oh, if you have a bus, please call in at 718-928-9732 and tell us how much you're going to give us for the ride. And talking about money, y'all know that Radio Free Brooklyn is an independent kind of grassroots station. So we are really, really, really fond of the donations that you guys are already doing. And please, if you have a spare dollar or a thousand or a million, or if you know where Donald Trump keeps his money, please go to rfb.nyc/pledge and donate as much as you want. Or if you want to become my personal sponsor, you can do the same thing, basically. So this is What is Love on Radio Free Brooklyn. And today we are talking about love and politics. And what do we do when politics crawls into our bed? So while we were listening to this track Cold War, Mitra brought up a good idea of how political views and ideologies sometimes not just divide us into large groups, but the actual divide is within our so-called collectives or communities or tribes. And Das and I, we were debating about this term tribe earlier. So by tribe, I refer just to a certain group of people that is tied closely by certain, I guess, ideology or approach to life. All right. Mitra?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I think it's interesting how, especially now, we're such a divided country. With the election, we see the clear divisions. And what I've been finding within my own social circles, which aren't quite as, like, ideologically wise, they aren't divided, but I find people fighting about little things within and how people represent themselves or how they represent their own political ideologies or their activism or their, you know, protest or the way they speak about things. And I find that that's to me a little upsetting because I think in times like these, we need to come together and instead of like fighting and feuding and saying I'm right and you're wrong.
Could you give me an example that happened probably within your group of friends?
The safety pin. Have you heard of the safety pin that people are wearing to say that they're allies for?
I thought only punk rock rock stars wear safe pins.
Wait, explain it.
So basically, it's like to say, and it comes from Brexit. So people were doing this after Brexit, where they'd wear a safety pin to say, I'm an ally and I will support you or be there or, you know, if something goes down or just to show that you're sort of against what is the norm now. So people have been taking that from Brexit.
Protest.
And wearing it on their lapel or wherever to show that they're allies. But what's been happening is there's a lot of people questioning that. And I think it's really good to question it and to go, well, if you're an ally, you should go out and do something, right? Instead of wearing a safety pin.
Right.
It's not enough. The argument that wearing a safety pin, it's not enough.
And people point to it as like white privilege because I guess even though people of color are doing it too, but I find these things that are being discussed, like these little things, like I want as many allies as I can possibly get. I mean, people during the Vietnam War would wear like a band around their arm to show that they're, you know, we support each other. So I don't know why I brought that up.
Well,
but
I think
it's
even interesting you talking about how like it's a white privilege thing, but like, of course, like, well, people of color are doing it as well. And I think that for me, what I'm hearing is that you can't nail any particular group down for like any certain for any certain cause. Like you can't, even though we have all these clear divides happening, it's not so clear.
Totally. Like we can't say because you wear a safety pin, you're going to be necessarily a white male, blah blah blah, who sits on their couch and doesn't do anything that's considered activism, but. So.
But that's the whole thing, that even if our opponents or someone who is chosen a different view or ideology, we don't know the reason. Like I think Maria mentioned that we don't have to know a reason why they do that, but I feel like we actually do need to know a reason. And even, let's say with this past election, I have friends who voted for Trump, but they did not vote for Trump, let's say, because he's against abortion or because he's against immigrants, but they voted for him because they think that Hillary is a corrupted banker and Trump is all against big businesses, for instance. So I think to me it would be useful to know why exactly they didn't support my ideology, but they went with a different ideology to, you know, to help, I guess, shape our conversation and shape my love or my relationship with those people.
But they told you they thought Hillary was corrupt, so they went for the lesser of two evils. So you're going to have people saying that too. I do think it's good to discuss. You're right. Like, people do need to say, they should discuss the choices that they make. And I think the conversation around that is what we need. But also, we need to come together. And
how do we come together? I was talking about this with Dustin earlier today. And it's all great we're doing here. You know, like we discuss this. We talk to our friends. We talk to our families. But this all discourse stays within the same kind of group of people. Like, I feel that there are not enough bridges between different groups or different the opponents. Like, even given just this past election, we discuss, oh my gosh, I hate, let's say, Trump, or I hate Trump supporters, with people like-minded. Like, we're afraid to establish that contact with the Trump supporter and to actually find out why and he's supported or she's supported and whether or not we want to work with them and how we want to work with them. I guess my question is here, do we let politics in our way in building a relationship with others? Like, do we make it an important factor for us to decide who we want to be in love with, friends with, and so on?
Well, the political system in America, as it stands anyways, it's set up in a way that makes these conversations quite difficult, because it's set up in a binary where it's one or the other. You have to make a choice between, like, and of course there are other parties, of course, but, like, are there? Because you really, at the end, if, like, your vote is to, quote-unquote, count, you have to decide between two supposedly opposing stances. And I think that that binary in and of itself, when we're talking about politics, conflicts conversations.
Thanks, Dustin. Let me see. I think someone is on their phone. Hi, this is What Is Love.
Hi, this is Hugh Collins. Hugh Gettalo from What Would Save the World on Radio Free Brooklyn. I'm just calling because, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I'm just calling in because we were talking about, like, can you still, like, be friends with people who voted for Trump, or how do we look past that or figure out? I just wanted to call in to say that it's just so hard to overlook it. It's so hard to overlook some of the things that people ignored about him.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you mean? Can you elaborate?
Yeah, so, like, he says all this, like, really rapey shit about women, and says, like, said a lot of really, like, Islamophobic stuff. Like, stuff. So I'm, like, a Jewish person, and I, you know, come from a Jewish family, so it's, like, to hear him talking about potentially, you know, having a Muslim registry, I'm like, oh, my God, that's, like, some Holocaust-type shit.
Absolutely.
You know, like, I don't even like Hillary that much. Like, I don't, I, but, mm-hmm. but it's, like, it's really, I'm, like, really scared to go to my Christmas dinner. Even though I'm Jewish, I have, you know, Christian close family friends mm-hmm. and stuff. And we're going to go to their Christmas party. And I'm like, how the hell am I going to sit at dinner with my, you know, like, a chosen family uncle and be like, you voted for, like, some
for this pig.
What?
For this pig.
Huh? It's pig. You voted for somebody who's gonna be on, who, like, is talking about starting a Muslim registry, and your family members are Jewish, and I'm a woman, and you know that I'm bi, and he picked a vice president that is for gay shock therapy. Like, I understand all this tax stuff. Like, fuck your taxes. Like, really, fuck your taxes. Like, I mean, that's how I feel right now. Like, I'm very angry. I'm very, very angry. And
I know. But how do you deal with that? Like, how do you actually? Yeah, do you try to have a conversation with him, or you just excluded the entire political discourse from your relationship with your some of your relatives?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm thinking. I was talking to my partner last night about how I'm probably gonna have to write him a long letter before I go, to be like, do you understand why these things upset me? Because what I really want from a lot of Trump supporters right now is, like, an acknowledgement of how a lot of this stuff is not acceptable, regardless if they like his taxes and stuff. I want to hear from them, or a lot of those, you know, I feel so bad, like, this us them thing, but whatever. Mm-hmm. I want to hear from them. I do not think gays should be put into shock therapy. I do not think a Muslim registry is okay. I will fight for your abortion rights. I want to hear that, like, that if it comes to any of that stuff, that they will stand up and really try to, like, push against that stuff happening. And if not, then I don't really know what to do with those kinds of people.
In Attic, I also want to hear that. And so does Dustin, and so does Mitra. So, hey, you, Trump supporter, who is cool with his shit, call us on Radio Free Brooklyn at 718-928-9732 and just tell us. You know, we want to have a conversation. Like, we want to have an honest conversation, and you will be far from us, so we won't do any harm to you, I promise. Tuk, thank you so much for calling.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm on a car ride. We're all listening to you. Have a good day. It was awesome.
All right. Oh, thanks. You too.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
So, yes, like, everyone's frustrated right now. I called my mom yesterday, and my mom is a Hillary supporter. It actually was the first time for her and for me to vote in this country. which kind of makes it for me twice as hard, the results, I mean. So I told her about the show today, and I start to explain what I want to talk about on it. And she kind of cut me off immediately and just said, hey, you have to talk to, you know, the people who support Trump. You're too categorical. You're too opinionated. And basically, I couldn't have a dialogue with my mom, and she just hung up the phone, and the conversation was over, and she's my mother. I'm still not sure how to go about this conversations with the people you love and just the people around you. I mean, can we be honest about it, guys? Like, what language do we use? Is love the answer? Should we just love anyone and show the love regardless of their ideologies, even if they're ridiculous?
I mean, I think. Oh, less than, I don't know if that's the solution, but I do think it's important that we engage and we try to get the other side to engage. But what I found, I actually went to with a friend to Pennsylvania right after the election to go talk to Trump, women specifically, who voted for Trump, because we were curious why somebody would put a man like that into power, especially if you're a woman, a person of color, anybody, actually everybody should be questioned. But so we went to a town in Pennsylvania where 70% of the county voted for Trump. And we basically went door to door. We went to shopping malls and we went to like craft fairs, and we tried to engage with people who voted for Trump. And we approached probably 50 or so people, and only 6 agreed to talk to us.
What was your initial message to them?
Just we said we were collecting stories about the election and why people voted the way they did. And everybody who voted for Hillary, actually, they were open and willing to talk. And then people who voted for Trump, there's something that I was surprised, because I thought after a election and
now he's an official president. Yeah,
and the person you voted into power, you should be able to explain why. But I think politics have become tribal in a way, and people, a lot of these women, one woman said, I voted for Trump because my dad voted for Trump. This is a 60-year-old woman, and she goes, and it will be his last election, so therefore
she wanted to support
Jesus. Him and please him. She said, I wanted to please him. And then And then a couple of people said, "Oh, I voted for the lesser of two evils." I mean, which I can't really understand or justify, but at least they had some sort of, I don't know, some explanation. And then a lot of people said, "It's my private choice, and I don't want to talk about it," which I think is crazy because it affects all of us. So it shouldn't be private, and it should be something that's discussed. And a lot of people don't even know why they voted for Trump. Like,
they've just been always Republicans.
Republican, exactly. So, but I still think it's good to go out there and question people. And I do think, you know, as city dwellers and people who have our own social circles and Facebook, and like, we were in a fucking bubble. I'm sorry to say it, but like, we need to go out into these more rural communities and kind of engage and start talking.
Like, legitimately engage. And that's, I think, what I was trying to get at in the beginning of our conversation. I was talking about you and I and like the trouble of our relationship. Like, love is fucking tough.
Yep.
Like, and that's like, it's not easy at all. And it's not going into a situation with like, I am right, now tell me about the wrong that you've done, because I need to understand you're wrong. It's about going in there like, yo, what the fuck is up? Because I'm thinking this, and I'm thinking that you're thinking that, and I need to know what we're talking about. Because we're not talking, we're like pretending to be so private that we're not having real-ass conversations, that we're not approaching these situations, potentially, I'm assuming, really with an open spirit. And I think that, whatever, I don't know.
But I feel like I don't agree with you, but I feel like we do care, and we want to dig deep. To try to figure out those motives and differences once we already have a strong feeling or care for a person. Like, would you go around anybody you meet trying to understand why they're thinking differently?
I kind of do, personally. I try to, at least, because
I don't know how else to understand. I don't know how you can go into something with this, like, completely set, and then allow for, like, true conversation to happen. Like, you can, like, have a belief, and you can, like, sit in it, but I think you have to have a little bit of openness there if you really want to have some real
action. Who do you think is responsible for, maybe not responsible, but who might have a larger influence on people just learning, changing their sets, changing their attitude to having sets? I mean, we can say parents, but what if parents did not know how to do that? You know, like, who can help us, people overall, to start to change the way they think, or to change the way they approach the other person? Like, social media, just, I don't know. My parents didn't teach me that, but like Maria mentioned, I'm from a homogeneous society. My story is a completely different story.
Let's go to the song real quick.
Okay, that's very sensitive. Yeah, we're going to...
Yeah.
Well, to cheer you up, I'm going to play this fantastic and quite interesting song about what we've just been talking about, and you figure out the name yourselves.
One tribe, one kind, one planet, one race. It's all one blood, don't care about your face, color of your eye, or the tone of your skin. Don't care where you are, don't care where you been. Cause where we gonna go is where we wanna be. The place where the native language is unity, and the continent is called Pangea, and the main ideas are connected like a sphere. No propaganda to try to up a hand us, cause man, I'm loving this peace. Man, I'm loving this peace. Man, I'm loving this peace. I don't need no leader that's gonna force feed her. Concept to make me think I need her. Fear my brother and fear my sister and shoot my neighbor with my big missile. If I had an enemy, if I had an enemy, if I had an enemy, my enemy's gonna try to come and kill me because I'm his enemy. There's one tribe, y'all.
I think we have a call in the studio. Hi, this is What Is Love.
Hey, it's Greg.
Well, hold on. Let me turn the music down here. Oh, hello. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, it's Greg.
Okay.
Hey, Greg.
Hi,
how are you doing?
Good. Hi, guys.
We know Greg?
I was thinking about...
Oh, hey, Greg.
Hey, what's up?
How are you doing?
to answer, Sasha, your question just now about how can, like, people... what can influence people's a change in their thinking. I think personally knowing people of, you know, people of marginalized groups, like, you know, years ago, Dick Cheney was anti-gay legislation and a lot of things. And then suddenly his daughter came out as a lesbian and suddenly he had a change of heart. So it's unfortunate that it takes something like having someone in your family to suddenly change you, because it's very, then you're kind of a hypocrite. But mm-hmm. I think knowing, being friends with people from just different backgrounds makes it, it hits you on a more personal level, and then you can sort of relate to their.
But then you kind of have to force yourself to be friends with different backgrounds. No, like, we were lucky, all of us, by the way, Greg, Mitra, and Dusty, we all went to the new school a couple of years ago. That's how we know each other. And to be frankly, I don't know if we would ever have met and became friends if not for the school. So, Greg, going back to your, you know, statement, I absolutely agree. But how do you, in real life,
true,
how do
right.
you make
it's,
friends
it's
with
like,
people
yeah,
who are quite
it's like,
exclusive?
Yeah, it's like how does that start? It's the chicken or the egg, you know? Which starts which? But I think you just have to come. I think you have to come from like a place. I think if we come from like just as an individual, you come from a place of yes. You hopefully spread that very, you know, you spread that energy, and hopefully, you know, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen in a day. It's not going to happen in a year, but I feel like if you still put positivity into the air.
But I feel like you also, you have to care in the first place. You have to actually care about the things. Well,
right.
No, that's second thing. The first thing to be aware, and then the second mm-hmm. thing to care. Because otherwise, otherwise, I'd be just, you know, in my fucking Belarus with my homeboys drinking vodka or whatever, and don't give a damn about anyone else.
Yeah, exactly.
So do you think parents see that, you know, that opening attitude towards learning?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I think absolutely. I think parents can. I think if that's the same kind of thing of having an influence. I think if parents come from an open perspective, that's only gonna. I mean, you know, children are sponges, so their brains are sponges, so. Racism and everything like that.
Honestly, I don't worry about our kids. I think that'd be amazing, awesome people. But so how can we, right? How can we in our whatever early 30s, 40s, 50s, however, how can we help our society to change their attitudes and approaches and to shift their, you know, just to at least open up their perspective? And this question, by the way, to Mitra and Dust as well.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's great. Continue.
I was gonna say, I think you just have to be the example you want to be. Small acts of kindness and openness, and I mean that's through social media. That's through a lot of different channels. But I think if you the micro can then dictate the macro. You know what I mean?
Greg, what's your like number one solution? Like, what's your personal like? How do you go about it?
I mean, for me, the election was obviously shocking, and I'm just trying to think of ways. Like, it's made me think about doing more charity, doing more, just being kinder. Like, I think it has to be simple. I don't think it's for everyone. It's a different sort of method or different way of understanding the country, the people, the electorate around us. But for me, I think it's just like charity, being more informed, maybe even calling out ignorance on
calling out
media.
Ignorance. Would you call out ignorance to a person directly?
I mean, I might have to. Thanksgiving's coming up, so we'll all be around family and
one by one, right?
Yeah, so it could be a lot of awkward Thanksgiving dinners around.
Actually, I think this year Thanksgiving will be really interesting, considering that probably a lot of you know kids or younger people who voted for Hillary, they be coming home for the first time since then, and they might have to face the older generation. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it'll stir things up. I'm gonna go. I'll let you guys. I'm gonna listen to the rest of the show.
Awesome.
Show. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg.
Thanks, Greg.
I'll talk to you guys.
Greg, wait, hold on. When is your show? Oh, he hung up on me. So, Greg, son, that's not only me who can hangs up on people, but people sometimes hang up on me as well. So, Greg has his own show on Radio for Brooklyn. Starting this season, I think it's on Wednesday during the day around 12 p.m. I don't remember, need to check. But check that out, and guys, go to radiofreebrooklyn.com and listen to the podcast we have there, to the shows. A lot of our shows are live shows. You can call in and express your opinion, honest opinion. It's an honest station, it's an honest show. My show's an honest show. So, and make a donation. We'll be happy to receive annual donation from you. Wow. As much as that was a difficult show, considering the sensitivity of the subject, we only have a couple of minutes left. So no more music, I think. Yeah, guys, we have a couple of minutes left. So I'm still not clear. Like, we leave the door. We're gonna go have a drink. I'm gonna listen to Mitra to your story and give you a hug. But what do we do next? Because honestly, I don't feel love right now. Like, I don't feel like I want to go out and just share my love with everyone.
I'm heartbroken. Though. I mean, I think in some ways, like what we're experiencing in the election is, we have to go through the different feelings that we have. And right now, if you feel anger, you feel anger. Like, you have to just feel it and go through it. And I actually think it's good to keep some of that anger, be reminded, yes, so we're active for the next 4 years, because we got to fight to fight. But you don't have to go out there with love. I mean, respect more so.
But
or?
I think that's also a problem with, like, our understanding of love. And I think that the question really is, what is love? Because I think that, like, love is sometimes angry.
Yeah.
Like, don't separate these things, like, that we consider quote unquote
negative
from, like, this ultimate positive, which is love. Love, like, even if we're even doing, like, this whole Christian game that, like, kind of, like, was the narrative of the campaign, like, Jesus was, like, a radical, like, lover. Like, we're not even practicing Christianity, as I'm sure as he would have wanted us to. So, like, know that love is, like, is a fight. Love is tension. Love is a lot of heavy things that isn't just, like, beautiful and butterflies. And it's not something that's just gorgeous and it's not, we've domesticated love. And we need to understand that love it does get angry. And
boy, I love the way you use the domesticated term, and I feel like we need to start to the whole new theme about patriarchy and how it kind of helped win this election for Donald Trump, and even the fact that almost 40% of white women voted for him. But we only have 1 minute left, and unfortunately, I can't continue with this conversation. Guys, it was What is Love on Radio Free Brooklyn, and I'll hear y'all in 2 weeks on December 4th.
See ya.
See ya. Oh, that was 2 hours. Sorry. I want to break free.